The time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
This is WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College. We're the station making waves. Happy Friday. Now it's time for our big time local news and alternative views show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Why did we call it new? Because it's not the same as last week, of course. And today is Friday, April the 20th, 2012. Supposedly today is some big day in terms of marijuana. Kevin, I have a new co-host for today, Kevin Bruff from our WHFR staff. Since you're much younger than I am, I heard just references as if everybody knows what today is.
Yeah, we were talking about it earlier, and supposedly 420, some people are under the impression that that's the international police code for a suspect with marijuana. But so that's how it got the name National Marijuana Day on 420.
I see. So if they call in a someone that they've picked up or they have suspicion of that crime being committed, they'll say, hey, we got a 420 out here in Dearborn or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like we have a 420 in progress, but that's not what the code 420 is. I'm not sure how 420 came about, but that's what they say.
Wow. See? See, that's why I have co-host folks, because I don't know everything. And I'm the first one to admit that. And remember, if you believe that any TV or radio talk show host or so-called news person knows everything or everything is included in their story, every twist or turn, all the facts, you are so mistaken. I hate to burst that big bubble, but never take on face value, literally, anything that at least a single radio or TV news host or news person or commentator says as true. First of all, you should be the one analyzing the facts and deciding what the appropriate understanding of those are. But there's never enough time in most news programs. They give you 10 seconds, 30 seconds, and they go to another story. So they draw conclusions and based on the facts, so-called, that they have, based on their own personal interpretations. And then guess what? They didn't tell you the whole story. You don't have time. That's why, the new WHFR Journal, we're so special. We have a whole hour, and we're not formatted what's called in commercial radio a clock hour that we have to do something, 3 minutes from now, absolutely. Last night went to a local campaign kickoff for State Representative George Duraney. He gave me a free ticket last week. Okay, so I had to get the food, you know.
Yeah, nice.
It was over at Lapidus. Certain perks for journalists. Of course, they want us to think well of them and so on. I told them it didn't necessarily, just because I'm eating his food doesn't mean I'll vote for him. He is a nice person. A lot of our elected representatives are very nice people. You'd like to live next door to most of them, you know. And he did an interview here on the Journal March 16th, last month on the 16th. And we had sort of thought, well, about half an hour. I had a long list of questions, though, and he just kept answering them. So went on the whole hour. And, like, when else did he get that kind of, I won't say grilling, but intensive questioning on a wide variety of issues here in the local area? You know? You can go to a seniors meeting. Usually, I think it's sort of traditional for representatives that Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, also known as the Center, at the end of each month on a Friday, from I think it's 11 to 1 in the senior room, you can go and visit with the representatives. Just talk to them, say whatever you want to say. And I'm not sure if there's free coffee and donuts or not, but anyway, there's that's when they usually go there. And I know Duraney has those kinds of open sessions every month too. But, you know, will everyone attending say the same wide range of questions, and do they have enough background? I mean, I've only lived in Dearborn for 30 or some years and done this show for a while. So we got into it, you know, not challenging, not attacking, but I thought it was great. And I highly recommend for those folks listening right now that missed it, go to our website, whfr.fm, and download the MP3 from that day. You click on talk shows that you'll see on the front page, choose WHFR Journal and choose 31612. And you can either listen at that point, or you can download it, the file to your computer, and listen later. Because it's a great thing to do. Here's a plug, Kevin, for next week, Tuesday. And I hope you could be here, too. Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. will be in this same very studio. How many studios do we have here at Henry Ford Community? There's only two, actually. So, and the main studio is where we will be talking live to John B. O'Reilly Jr. Once a year we bring him in, and yes, it's during our Radiothon pledge drive, but we keep him the whole darn hour, and probably ask him more questions than he gets in any single situation any other time of the year. And we're very happy that he's agreed, of course, to do that. I've already received a few questions, by the way, from you folks via email. So if you have a question for Mayor O'Reilly, something responsible, then by all means, email it to whfr@hfcc.edu. And just in the subject heading, you can put down questions for the mayor. Okay? And it'll come to me, Jay Koronic, station advisor. And I'll be sure to ask that, unless it's already on my list, you know. But so that's next Tuesday, the 24th, a special edition of the Journal. Because Mayor O'Reilly couldn't come next Friday, but we're going to have sort of a spotlight on all the Tuesday forum shows that we have here, maybe some of which you never caught because you always listen on Friday and you think, well, that's it. That's nothing else they can talk about that would be of interest to me locally that would be challenging and interesting. Well, you're very mistaken. Tuesdays from 1 to 2, we have five different one-hour-long talk shows that we host here locally on a wide range of topics. And I'm going to be here next Friday, the 27th, with those people, of course, asking for your money, asking for a pledge donation to help support WHFR. Don't call now. Not yet. Ooh, wait for the big moment. We got all kinds of special surprises and issues for you. And so next Friday, we're going to be here with the Forum talk show host. At least three, if not four of them, will be here with me and talking about their shows and about how special they are. And you may not have known all the other locally hosted talk shows that we do here at WHFR. You know, each person just has a show once a month for an hour, so they make it really good because they got a whole month to prep, and they make it really good. That is what's coming up here, and we're going to get to the stories of the day now. Kevin, you've been just talking about your background a little bit. I know you've been a reporter for the Henry Ford Community College student newspaper, The Mirror, for a while.
Yeah, about the last 2 years, I have been a contributing writer and the staff photographer over there at the Mirror News.
Mm-hmm. And in addition, he's a photographer. You take a lot of great photographs before the Mirror News and other things that are going on around here. So, and I have to commend you, Kevin, if you want to get a job in the media, in journalism at any point, got to be multi-talented. I don't know if you're aware of, you probably met J. Patrick Pepper at some of the big conferences. He's the main, or I think, clearly the only full-time reporter for the Dearborn Press and Guide these days locally. And you know, he's got to do everything. He shoots video. I think he uses his 35 millimeter still camera, you know, his DLSR. I think he sets it for video because I don't see him carrying two separate cameras. But I know my digital, looks like single lens reflex camera, electronic digital camera, that can be set for video too. So he does all three. He does the interviews, he does audio recordings, he's got a little pocket digital audio recorder, and much of his material can be placed on the Dearborn Press and Guide website if it can't, you know, obviously can't use video or audio in the newspaper yet.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's the big thing too. A lot of reporters now, a lot of media outlets are requiring all their reporters to be multi-talented mm-hmm. in that aspect where they do have to do all the audio, all the video, all the pictures, and yeah. writing, and then edit it themselves.
I think that's a clear trend is that, you know, there is a Press and Guide website right now, and there's a newspaper. But I don't know how many years. It won't be that long, folks. I mean, the newspapers are becoming interactive. In other words, there's the story, there's a picture, and you're looking on your tablet or your computer or whatever, especially on your tablet, and you can click on the picture or click for the audio file. Most computers will allow you to do this, but now it's on most portable devices. And so it takes a redesign of the page and the graphics a little bit, but all that can be included. And if you want to hear the audio, you want to see the video, it's all right there. It seems to me at a certain point when there's more of these devices out there and people get more familiar with tablets and laptop computers, portable devices like that, why would the newspaper want to do the cost of the print version as well as the cost of doing the website?
Exactly.
But they're developing, and I think that eventually they're going to have to merge because, well, number one, we're killing too many trees, folks. Yes, we are. I mean, won't believe it. Even though the newspapers, the print papers are declining, I think we got to save print and the trees for books. Yes, I'm still a big believer in printed books. The most important ones have got to be there. You've got to share them. You've got to loan them out. You've got to make them last years. Give them to your kids if they're good. Oh, my God, it's a heritage, folks. I hope we never give up on books. You know, there shouldn't be this deforestation that's going on, and a lot of it these days still worldwide goes to daily newspapers, weekly newspapers, and so the print cost is going up and up for these people. So I think it's going to merge, and of course, sounds like, Kevin, you're well aware of the trends, and you'll be ready.
Oh, yeah, I've been following them for the last 2 years here while in college at Henry Ford Community College, mm-hmm. and like you were saying with the DSLRs that I have on mine, it also does video. I have a full frame digital single lens reflex camera that not only does it do pictures, stunning 21 megapixel pictures, but it does high definition 1080i video along with it. So there you go.
That's pretty much better than my eyes can see. So I think that that resolution, very impressive, will work. We have a picture, just in case you want to see his face, folks, that Kevin took last week with his fancy camera, of our previous WHFR news director, who has now gone on to better things. Yeah, a paying job. That's better. Okay, over in Ludington, Michigan, we're talking, of course, what was his name again?
I think you were talking about Dennis.
Oh, Dennis Reimer. Yeah, how soon we forget. Yeah. Hopefully he's listening and getting a laugh out there in Ludington. Great sense of humor, that Dennis, especially, and he needed it when working with me, let me tell you. We have a little, we have what's called a little photo gallery, and it's at the WHFR.fm website. And if you just click on whatever picture happens to be there, they change at random, you'll see a number of folders that these pictures come from. And there's one that says alumni, WHFR alumni. And I just started that last year. So there's only two pictures in there. And Dennis Reimars, he was our former news director, and Kevin took that shot and cropped it, as they say. But Dennis had already gotten a really cropped haircut anyway. So,
Still.
Anyway, he made the picture smaller so you could see his face better, and so thank you for that. And Dennis will be immortalized, rotating at random on our website for years and years. So
as long as it's there.
As long as it's there. So don't worry, I'll take your picture when you want to leave. I'll do a good job, Kevin. Okay, let's take a look at the headlines from the Dearborn Press and Guide and the Times Herald. One of the things about the show and the work of people like Dennis Reimars and even myself, I've been getting out and about a little more. Most of their headline stories for the last week, we've already done. We talked about them and presented them last week or the week before. And we were helped, of course, a little bit by dearborn.patch.com because Jessica Carreras, who is the lead writer and editor for that web-only service, for free, by the way, they're at most of these events, and they get the story up online almost immediately. And the Press and Guide tries to do that, too, by the way, if you go to pressandguide.com. But so we've, scooped the printed papers for the last couple of weeks. It doesn't mean you shouldn't read the papers for all the things that we can't say, because we, even with an hour, we can't say every word that they write. We can't give you that in-depth detail that you may want. So by all means, try to get a copy, read, subscribe to the Dearborn Press and Guide and the Times Herald, however possible. Okay, Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday. Things we didn't talk about in previous shows. Greenfield Village is now open for the season. How is that news? I think it's fantastic, folks. What a great cultural and recreational resource. I have gotten a... or is she paying it for it now? Anyway, and a couple of years ago, I got a season pass for my daughter and my granddaughter to use together anytime they want. And it's not that expensive, folks. Actually, a single admission is kind of expensive, I think, if you're just going to spend a couple hours. Now they can go anytime, 7 days a week that they're open. I think they're about 9 to 6 or something, their traditional hours. And but now all the buildings in Greenfield Village are open again for visiting. As it was getting colder and colder last fall, they kind of closed down some of the village operation, except for special events. And, of course, there'll be all kind. They're a nonprofit organization under the Henry Ford, which is a nonprofit. Everything they do over there for the museum and the village. But the village is now open for the season, and we think you should be part of that. We think you should support it. I've talked to many students and people from Dearborn, and we live practically right next door to it. And many of these people, unlike myself, have never gone, ever. Why? Because, well, it's right next door. I can go anytime I want to. But then they don't. I think if you get a pass and you go, you'll see how great a cultural, historic, and ever-changing resource in entertainment. A couple years back, maybe five or six years ago at least, they added a new little village conglomeration, and there's an artificial lake there, and it's sort of like an old-time village around a little natural lake. And yes, they have a few more rides that they've added, but they haven't made a carnival out of it. It's all very tasteful, and so I wish them well. And we should not deny or reject or turn down or miss any opportunity to participate in Greenfield Village and the Henry Ford Museum.
Yeah, it's very educational too. You'll walk out of that place with an immense amount of educational value than before you walked in.
Absolutely. The of course, we were over there last week and we talked about this, and the launch, the so-called public relations launch event that only the press were invited to and a few dignitaries, WHFR was there along with, of course, all the other reporters. And that means that Greenfield Village, the north side, will be connected to the new intermodal train station. So people getting off at Dearborn stop, they can proceed right on over the overpass, or it might be an underpass, I'm not sure which, but they can go right into Greenfield Village, a great advantage for people coming from out of town, certainly, on the train, which, as it was announced last week, oh my gosh, will be within 5 years, 110-mile-an-hour average from Chicago.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Those Chicago people shouldn't miss that. They have to hold their breath for only about a couple hours, and they'll be here. You know, what is it, only about 230, 240 miles to Chicago?
About a 4 or 5 hour car ride.
Oh, at least, yeah. And the traditional train now takes 6 to 7 hours because they stop a lot. But they're going to have, the high-speed trains will be more or less express trains. They might stop one or two places, but then go like crazy to the 110 miles an hour. So
it's long overdue.
Yep. And as was announced last week, too, but not in the papers yet, MDOT, that is Michigan Department of Transportation leader Kirk Stubel, said he's working on negotiations with Canada so we can have a passenger rail connection to Toronto and, he hoped, Montreal within a few years, also high speed. And I thought, how do you get over the bridge? Is it, you have to wait for the second bridge? And Mayor O'Reilly correctly pointed out there is a rail tunnel, rail-only tunnel, under the Detroit River.
Yeah, as it's set up right now. It's used for just freight.
Right. But somehow they'll come up with border guards or something in Toronto or somewhere else. And I guess they're getting their train tracks ready for high speed, too, because he was saying it could be 110 mile an hour to Toronto from Dearborn. So, and I used to drive a lot to Toronto until the hassle at the bridge and the long backup sort of has discouraged me. I mean, I've got all my documents and multiple copies, and my driver's license is upgraded to the big
enhanced.
Time. The enhancer. So, but, you know, it's still a little bit off-putting to think about these massive searches and seizures, anytime the border guards want to do it, of course. And in fact, why don't you cover that story, which is actually in the Dearborn Press and Guide from the 18th. Some people in this area are suing the border over that kind of questioning that they feel is unfair.
There's from Wednesday, April 18th in the Dearborn Press and Guide. There's a story about four local Dearborn Muslim residents that are suing the federal government over what basically amounts to as stereotyping and improper questioning and detainment at the border. They're harassing them about, like, how many times a day they pray, their religious practices, and all things like that. And it's unbelievable what's happening now.
Have you had any experiences of harassment, even though you're Caucasian and pretty clean cut?
Yeah. Now, personally, myself, I haven't been over there since before 9/11. I used to go over there a lot when I was 19. My friends and myself, of course, we'd go over there because it's legal to drink. And we would get harassed just because we were basically, in their eyes, punk kids. But any kind of racial profiling or harassment that these four local area Muslim residents are getting.
No, because, as I said, you're white.
Yeah.
But you might be punk kids, and that could be a sort of a stereotype. And you're all half drunk coming back over the border, and
they'd tear a car apart all the time. They'd make us pull over for second inspections, and they'd tear the car apart looking for things, and then leave it laying there for you to put back together.
Yeah, they might have suspected drugs or something.
Yeah,
you know, because of those kids, they'll do all that crazy stuff. Yeah, actually, anybody would do it, and you know. If I was a professional drug dealer, what is that story on TV, Breaking Bad, about the high school chemistry teacher that it's on AMC, it's not basic channel, but it's on the third or fourth year, and things are going pretty fast downhill for him, but he found out there was all this money to be made by making illegal drugs
out of the chemistry lab.
Well, at home and other places now, and now, of course, he's competing with drug warlords and so on, and and he shaved his head, and
is that the designer drugs that are now coming onto the market?
If you know your chemistry, then certainly that'd be possible too.
Yeah, they can change one little molecule around and sell it as a potpourri or an incense.
I'd like to complete my thoughts,
okay.
So let me go back for a second. If I was a professional, I wouldn't hire people to take my drugs that could be easily profiled, like either punk kids with maybe long hair or short hair, whatever the case may be, or people that looked like they had relatives from the Middle East or heritage from the Middle East, or I don't know, anything that even African Americans, wouldn't you want? Well, you get those older Caucasian types, maybe grandfather, grandmother. I don't want to give anybody ideas, but I'm just saying that want to draw attention.
Yeah.
That's crazy. If you're really doing something illegal, you're not going to use the obvious types. for it.
Yeah.
However, unfortunately, a lot of people who get into criminal behavior or criminal activities, sort of like amateurs, they don't even think about that, and they just, you know, they get caught.
Yeah. You want someone that's going to be not profiled.
Right.
Not to give anybody ideas.
But you mentioned, and we like to do these things called segues, folks. That means the ideas flow seamlessly from one to the other, even though the stories change. And you mentioned designer drugs. And normally, and in fact I told you earlier, we don't do crime stories here. There was a great tragedy and loss of a significant Dearborn Schools administrator, Robert Cipriano, this last week. He died in a home break-in. Out in his home in Farmington Hills, you've heard the story, you've seen the pictures already. I don't know, just one detail stood out. They think the main attacker, which was his 19-year-old son Tucker, which is also
I've also heard it's his son, adopted son.
Yes,
I've heard different versions.
Adopted son. Well, somebody made a comment, and these things keep coming out, that it was because of the death of his natural mother. And I don't know where she was or who she was, but she, for some reason, died. Not by accident, but just died, I think. And that broke him up. But then he already had a drug problem, and they said that particular night he was on a designer drug called Spice. So don't try those designer drugs, folks. Don't say, well, it's not heroin, or it's not cocaine, so
it's
okay
legal
to use. And it's kind of legal because they haven't found a way to think, you know, they haven't written the law yet. These things are out of control. First of all, you never put anything in your mouth unless you really know where it comes from.
Yeah, and they're absolutely so dangerous, so unbelievably dangerous.
From what you've heard.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, I myself would never try
I have no
like
experience
that.
Either, even in my college days, of course. We didn't have designer drugs then, but even then the rule was, if you don't know who provided this and where it came from, don't buy it.
Yeah.
Don't eat it. Don't smoke it. You have no way of really knowing what it is or how potent it is or how poisonous it is. And that was a rule even back in the 60s and 70s when people were first getting into smoking marijuana and trying.
Oh, yeah.
Some people were smoking banana skins, believe it or not.
Oh, I've heard about that. Oh,
yeah. I wouldn't recommend that either, folks. Well, it was an organic banana. Yeah, but arsenic is organic too, and if you ingest that, you'll die. So come on, there's a lot of organic poisons out there, folks. Wouldn't recommend it just because it's organic for you to smoke it, or swallow it necessarily. So I'm just saying, the designer drug thing, it's an issue. Just a little cautionary tale. Pass it along to your loved ones, too. He was his upset, his disenchantment, his, I guess, anger against his parents. I mean, it could have been so crazy that would he have broken into the house at 3 a.m. and not believe his family was going to be there sleeping? Did he break in to steal something, or did he? He probably was so muddled by the drugs and this other upset. Who knows?
Yeah, but it's gotten to his mind and made him delusional, like a lot of reports say.
You say, well, it's so tragic that people within the same family would do it. Remember, the rule is, folks, in terms of major deaths, usually gun-related, not baseball bat-related, in the Detroit area and around the country in urban areas, if homicides are mostly done by people who know the other person.
Yeah, yep.
Friends or family. That's that's really tragic, isn't it?
Yeah, usually.
Of course, you don't
want
to be killed by a stranger either, because that doesn't seem right, does it?
No
reason. They have nothing to blame me for. You know, I don't even know them. I didn't do anything to them. But so both are equally tragic. But some people think, oh well, that never should have happened. Well, it mostly does happen between friends and family. So
jealousy, rage.
Oh,
yeah,
it's unbelievable. And of course, these drugs, especially these weird things that people make up in their chemistry labs, as well as the ones we know about, heroin and cocaine. And, of course, the thing about heroin is after you take it, you're probably out of commission for a while, but it's when you can't get it, you start getting edgy and you want to steal, you want to be violent maybe.
A lot of crime is committed not while they're on it, so to say, but when they can't get more of it and their body needs it.
I hope we're doing a lot of drug education. Well, as well as sexual education in our public schools. I'm not sure what's happening these days. My daughter hasn't been in the Dearborn School since the 90s, but that's really important to get all the facts out there and indicate the dangers. But when you get the facts out there, I think people would be better off. Of course, I'm a teacher, and we always believe that education, enough of it, of the right sort, is really the answer to improving our society.
Yeah, education and not misinformation.
Boy,
big difference.
We're really on our soapbox today, Kevin. Okay. Let's see here. Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday, just the only other little story I find. Vacant buildings have been torn down in Dearborn, and one is Brothers Tuxedo. I don't know if you saw that. The picture's inside on page 3A, Kevin. That's on Michigan Avenue, and that was Hakeem Fakhouri was the owner of that property, and he was trying to prevent, even though Brothers Tuxedo hasn't been there for years, he owns the property, and he was hoping to get special tax favors from the city, and so it wasn't being torn down. Well, I think it was last December, the Dearborn City Council said, well, it's been 5 years. You haven't been able to develop. Maybe it's more than 5 years. I think they gave him an extension on that. And so we're just not going to give you that extra potential tax incentive that maybe you could transfer to another owner. We gave it, you know, so many years. Of course, they were bad years economically, according to Fakhouri, and it's hard to find a buyer for anything, especially around 2008 and the 2009 meltdown of our economy. But nonetheless, since he wasn't making any more, he had no more tax advantage for it, he gave permission and the city tore that down. And, of course, now they can build something else back up. They have more land available for people to consider doing something with. There's already a large a plot of land next to one of the banks in West Dearborn on the south side of the street. Which bank is it? Is it First Federal? Anyway, they put up new sculpture there. There was a large sculpture there for like 4 or 5 years, kind of rusted and old, and they changed that to something that I think the Dearborn Educational Foundation, or the Dearborn Foundation, it's called, well, one or the other, that they just had an unveiling of a number of public sculptures done by high school students, mostly in Dearborn, to try to spruce up the place. But I was always thinking, wouldn't it be great, though, that I know it's right on Michigan Avenue, and so probably there's a security issue, but have a public garden there.
Yeah.
Dearborn believes in growing its own food. The problem is, hey, when those tomatoes start to ripen or whatever, in the middle of the night, somebody stops at Michigan Avenue, runs in and gets a bushel of tomatoes and drives away. So, I mean, it's probably a little bit too public. And hey, they say that plants don't like loud noises, as well as all the carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide coming out of the exhaust of the cars. So probably wouldn't be ideal to put a plot there. But it's almost as big in size as the area they devote to the farmer's market across the street, which is in the Bryant Library parking lot.
Yeah, and you mentioned libraries, too, and you mentioned them tearing down this building. The fountain in front of the Henry Ford Library on Michigan Avenue, there's now talk of dismantling that.
Yeah, that was an interesting story. I can't remember. Was that also in the Sunday paper?
But I saw it on Dearborn Patch last night, yesterday.
Yeah, I read that too. And let's sort of summarize it from our memories. I remember when it was first donated. A couple of very generous donors donated, get this, $200,000 to build the fountain in front of the Henry Ford Centennial Library, Michigan Avenue, in sort of the middle of the town there. And it was to be used. Of course, the fountain didn't cost that much, I don't think, to build, but the extra money was to be used in perpetuity to keep it going, sort of like an eternal flame, but in this case, an eternal
water
fountain.
Yeah.
It turns out, I guess that money's all gone by now, because that was more than a decade ago when that was first put in. The story said the cost of maintaining that from year to year is $30,000 to $40,000.
Yeah, for the upkeep and maintenance.
And I don't think they added the water bill in on that, but
that's a lot of money.
Yeah, just for a fountain. Excuse me. And they say now it's got a problem with its motor. That is what pumps the water out. And that's going to be, I forget the number now, but another $30,000 or $40,000 or more,
just to
replace the motor.
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of motor is this? An electric motor, obviously. Oh, there's an electric bill too, isn't it?
Yeah.
But what kind of motor costs $40,000? I mean, that's more than the cost of the Ford Mustang Boss 302 motor. I mean, come on, supercharged,
exactly.
Turbocharged. What kind of motor to pump that water would cost that much? It's probably one of a kind, you know, not a lot of water pumps that pump that much water, I guess, made in the U.S. Probably handmade somewhere.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
One person in Ohio makes them, you know. I don't know, but, you know, that certainly is out there for community discussion. We could ask Mayor O'Reilly about that next Tuesday, of course, among all the
great
other things. But it seems to make sense to me, and I think most people agreed, is that there's got to be a less expensive way to do that. I just think it's a broken promise. I think that's unfortunate. I don't know if the people that donated the $200,000.
Just a couple years back, too, from what I understand.
It was a year 2000, or I think it was about 10 or 12 years. I'm not sure. But, yeah, but I just figured out at $30,000, $40,000 a year, that money's all gone now, including whatever the cost of putting it in was. And I can't believe those maintenance. It seems to me those maintenance costs are more than the maintenance costs for an entire swimming pool in Dearborn.
Yeah, I wouldn't think that.
I think
they would,
they're only about
that.
$20,000 or $30,000 a year just for standard maintenance to the swimming pools. And there's I'm talking about big pools, okay?
That
and they
big
need
Olympic
water, and yeah, and they have filtering systems and all that. I'm not even sure. I guess you need a filtering system of something when tree branches and seeds fall into the water. You can't have that go into the motor. But still, they don't have to chlorinate it or anything.
Yeah, true.
So it's way too costly a proposition. Shame on the city for, of course, it was good times then, right?
Yeah.
But imagine what $200,000 could have done for the library in general, though. I mean,
yeah,
in terms of resources and facilities and maybe a rainy day fund for the library.
Maybe they wouldn't have been able to close the other library.
You know, people, they could have had a plaque in the front with their names on it forever. You know, maybe they still will.
Yeah.
Out of guilt for maybe probably tearing it down and not replacing it with anything. The biggest suggestion I noticed in the story was that they could make a small park or garden out of it, with a variety of beautiful plantings, and they could assign it to the volunteer Dearborn Garden Club.
Yeah, the Garden Club volunteered and
they've already done that in some other locations in Dearborn,
yeah,
I believe.
And,
so,
and it's working really good.
Yeah, and I think it'd be fine. I think they need a really nice plaque for these people that gave the $200,000 there nonetheless, you know.
Yeah.
But very short-sighted, crazy ideas. When you try to think long-term on these things, it was just the wrong thing to do. But, I mean, I guess it was either, I'm not sure they could, do you really want to negotiate with someone that wants to give you $200,000 for a fountain?
Yeah.
Well, we'd rather put it into a rainy day fund for the library to buy more books. Oh, we want a fountain. That's what we want. We're not going to give it to you. I'm not sure. I'm just saying it's hard to break the bubble or the concept of somebody that's giving you that much money.
Yeah, how do you
tell
argue
them that it's really not going to be cost effective in 10 years? So I understand the problem, but I think it was interesting because usually there's a lot of people that tear into ideas or change at patch.com commentaries, or sometimes even at Press and Guide commentaries that, you know, on their website, you want to make a comment to the story. And
yeah, and there's a wide variety of them.
Yeah,
too.
There's a few people that are negative about everything, and rightly so. I mean, there should be a healthy dose of cynicism in everything. I mean, it's very healthy. But then, how do we move forward? How do we be positive for the better, considering current situation? And I think that garden got an awful lot of support, the garden idea.
Yeah,
so
in the comment section, yeah, I noticed that a lot of people were very supportive of that.
Okay, we're going to take the comments of Jim Hightower in just a moment here. You know, Jim Hightower is a populist commentator out of Texas, which you don't normally think as a place of populism in terms of commentary. I think of Rick Perry, their governor, and his version of conservatism. But nonetheless, each Friday we do feature commentaries from Jim Hightower. And we will right now, too, because he challenges you, and he's also, he's darn entertaining, okay? That's what I say.
Yeah, very thought-provocative.
Yeah. Here's, he has one that, the first one is entitled The Mad Hatter of a GOP's Tea Party. And we don't normally, you know, he has commentaries that talk about most of the political leaders in the country, and you've heard those from one source or another, MSNBC or whatever. But sometimes he brings up a particular crazy person. I'm sorry, but it's something that's gone way out of whack that we don't hear about through other media. And that's what the WHFR Journal is all about, alternative ideas. And we try to be fair to all the ideas, including those that you haven't heard before. So first commentary, the Mad Hatter of the GOP's Tea Party. And secondly, this unbelievable thing about two-headed trout that's happening. I think it's Idaho. And take a listen. These are important things, folks, to challenge your day. So here comes Jim Hightower on the new WHFR Journal, making waves.
Just when you think the Tea Party Republican majority in the U.S. House could not possibly get any screwier, up jumps Representative Alan West. Once hailed as a Tea Party star, the Florida Republican apparently has been spending way too much time down the rabbit hole with the Mad Hatter, the Dormouse, the March Hare, and the other wacky members of the Alice in Wonderland Tea Party. How else to explain his latest eruption of right-wing jabberwocky accusing a large group of his congressional colleagues of being communists? This blast from the GOP's McCarthyite past came from West when he was asked at a town hall meeting about the number of, quote, card-carrying Marxists in Congress. Joe McCarthy would have been proud of West, who puffed himself up and declared, "I believe there's about 78 to 81 members of the Democrat Party that are members of the Communist Party." As the audience broke out in murmurs of disbelief that such babbling nonsense was coming from their own Congress critter, he doubled down on this dastardly accusation by pointing to a legitimate group that he says is a nest of commies. "They actually don't hide it," he blurted. "It's called the Congressional Progressive Caucus." "But wait, I know that group. I know nearly all of its members. They're good, solid, red-blooded, salt-of-the-earth American populists, not communists." As an aide to proud Progressive Caucus member Shelley Pengree of Maine put it, Shelley is a Democrat, a farmer, and a Lutheran, but no, she's not a communist. This is Jim Hightower saying, when Woody Guthrie was smeared with the same baloney in the real McCarthy era, he explained that he wasn't a commie, quote, "but I have been in the red most of my life." Some worry that Alan West is a dangerous reincarnation of old Joe McCarthy, but he's way too much of a screwball to be dangerous. The best thing to do would be to ridicule him, but he seems to be doing that on his own.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The corporate propensity for rationalizing the irrational in the pursuit of profit appears to be boundless. Consider J.R. Simplot, a giant conglomerate whose mining operations in Idaho have grossly polluted creeks with selenium, a highly toxic metal. But Simplot's scientists rationalized the corporation's dirty deed with a 1,000-page study asserting that even though the selenium contamination of creeks was well above levels allowed by environmental law, the water remained, quote, safe for fish. Tucked back in the appendix of Simplot's study, however, were a few photographs that vividly depicted the screaming irrationality of the corporation's safety claims. The most stunning photo was of a two-headed baby trout produced by Simplot's pollution of area creeks. It was not the only sickening deformity caused by the selenium. Other trout had facial, fin, and egg disfigurements. These grotesque mutations led to calls for an independent agency to conduct a full scientific review of Simplot's 1,000-page study. At Senator Barbara Boxer's request, this was done by the Fish and Wildlife Service, which issued a scathing report in January that bluntly branded the corporate study biased. For example, Simplot systemically understated the deformity rate of baby fish in the creeks. It's not 20% that are deformed, but 70%. Ask about this rather broad discrepancy, a Simplot vice president could only grump that the Fish and Wildlife Review was, quote, "totally outside the regulatory process." Well, thank goodness for that. As another independent toxicology expert says, "I have seen lots of malformed baby fish, but never one with two heads. We need to be careful here." This is Jim Hightower saying, yes, let's. In fact, let's stop swallowing any irrational rationalization by corporations that pollute for profit.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
And what do you think about that? Two-headed trout. The owner of the farm of the industrial area that's polluting the river, they said, well, you know, our multi-page documents, there's only 20% deformities in the fish. 20% of the fish have two heads?
Only?
But the official survey by the U.S. government agency that Senator Barbara Boxer of California said, you got to go and take a look at this. They said, that report is scandalous. 70% of the fish. Now, to me, that's a majority. That's a two-thirds majority. That can override the president. You know, I'm saying, making jokes here, of course, exaggerating, but 70% of the fish are massively deformed. And you say, well, I don't care about fish. Do you want to eat a two-headed fish?
No, not at all.
I mean, that doesn't seem right. That does not seem right. And I say, well, they're doubly healthy if you eat the heads. No, I don't think so. You got four eyes staring at you before you cut into them. I can't do the two eyes myself. But
double the danger.
Hmm. So let's try to support anything that supports our environment in a positive way. It's worth it, folks. We live here. Clean air, clean water, clean food. Yeah,
no,
healthy
that's
food.
Important.
Oh, my gosh.
So much more important than people realize.
Yeah, and you say, well, I buy my food at the grocery store. Excuse me. You haven't heard the latest about processed food and packaged food and all that food.
Genetically modified.
Yes, and all that food that comes from halfway around the earth, okay? How does it stay looking so fresh when it comes 12,000 miles? Ask yourself about that. In some cases, versions of ammonia, formaldehyde are sprayed on it. Oh, yeah, it won't kill you right away.
The new one about the meat, they use carbon monoxide to retain the red color in it.
Well, that was the pink slime story, yes, especially. But even other meat, too, yeah. Try to support local farmers, locally grown food. And some people say, well, I'm just going to buy local within 100 miles. Well, farm markets, sometimes they drive down further than that from upper Michigan. But I think if it's within a couple hundred miles, you could say it's relatively fresh. And does it have to be certified organic? No. Most of the small farmers at farm markets, they hardly use any pesticides anyway. And they can't afford to get certified. It may be, organic, in fact. But the certification to become organic costs them a good deal of money, I understand, and they can't afford that and still stay farming on their little one-person or one-family farm. So, by the way, our farm market in Dearborn at the Bryant Library parking lot will open again for business on Friday, May 25th, and then every Friday after that from 8 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon. Henry Ford Community College is a co-sponsor, as it has been in the past, of that event, making it possible, along with Oakwood Healthcare System. Without those two so-called corporate sponsors, it wouldn't happen, which is sad. I think the city of Dearborn ought to just make it happen.
Yeah.
Definitely. As a service to taxpayers, we need to make it happen. But then they'd be competing with the full-time markets that have relatively fresh food.
That's people's misconception. You tell them to get local, though. Well, I buy from the grocery store on the corner. That's local. No,
that's not what happens. I know there's certain initiatives from Kroger to try to buy more local. It hasn't happened much. I was surprised the last time I went to, is it called the Dearborn Farm Market on Michigan Avenue? They're very popular with people. They didn't have the selection they had a few years ago, but I didn't see that much local either. Maybe they're waiting for the season to open more so they get more local food produced, because Michigan, it was warm for a while, then it was freezing cold. I'm sure that didn't help certain crops, and now it's starting to get warmer again, and so I do encourage all the local farm markets to try to do local as much as possible, as well as Kroger's and that's what we should be looking for and asking about and buying as much as possible.
Yeah.
Okay. Couple things here, folks. One is I want to give you a couple of state of Michigan updates here, folks. And this is brought to my attention last week by Dennis Reimars, and I now subscribe. Oh my gosh, there's so many email newsletters that I get now every day. And you should, too, if you have a couple hours of nothing else to do. But that's why you're listening to the show, because you don't have that much time, maybe. MLive, MLive.com. Tim Skupik, who used to be an editorial opinion person in the Press and Guide every week, mysteriously has disappeared. I bet they were charging money for it or something. But he is on almost every day with his opinions about the state of Michigan and what's going on in Lansing on MLive.com. If you don't know Tim Skupik, more than 30 years, he's done Off the Record, which is his show, 30 minutes every week on public broadcasting stations. Yes, Channel 56 in Detroit, and also the station out of Flint. I think it's whatever the call letters are, which is on WOW. WOW Cable has both Channel 56 PBS and also the Flint station. And I usually catch it on I think it's Channel 8. I usually catch it there. I think in Detroit from Channel 56, it's actually 11:30 a.m. on Sunday mornings. I'm just guessing. That's where it used to be. But so he knows. He knows all these reporters, and he's also a contributor to WWJ Radio, too. So Tim Skupik is really knowledgeable. He's written a couple books about, one about Governor Granholm behind the scenes when she was governor, and his knowledge is supreme, and his opinion should be listened to. You don't have to believe him, but listen to them and think about them. So we've talked about a couple coming up November, big election. Did you hear? Presidential election.
Yeah.
Once every 4 years. I can imagine somebody out there saying, really? I didn't know that. Oh, come on. Yeah, we know that it's going to be a big presidential election year.
Hugely important this year.
I think they all are, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
They all should be in your minds, folks. And if you're not registered to vote, shame on you. But you'll need to do that by October. Why put it off? Do it tomorrow. Oh, no. They're closed on Saturday.
Doesn't cost you anything.
But Monday, go to your city hall or city clerk's office in your township and register, just in case you find somebody or something to vote for. And one of the things that I thought was definitely going to be on the ballot, George Dereny thought it was when he was here in May, the emergency manager ballot proposal. Now, what that was a petition drive to get a ballot proposal on the ballot that would eliminate the last emergency manager law that was voted into place and approved by Governor Snyder at the beginning of 2011. Okay. Yes, we already had one before that. Okay. But the one they put in place is the one that allows the state of Michigan, if the governor decides, to go in and take over any school district or any city with their own people anytime they want to. The city, the school district doesn't have to be asking for help. They don't have to be bankrupt. They can just go in at any time. I thought that was called dictatorship.
Yeah, that is. It's how they get rid of the elected officials.
And all contracts, legally negotiated contracts, can immediately be negated.
Yeah, that's
totally
that's
thrown out.
Not good.
All elected officials have no power, no say immediately. What kind of law is this? It's instant dictatorship law. If there's anything other than the Patriot Act, that I feel is totally undemocratic and totally dictatorial in its nature. I mean, heading us not towards socialism or communism, but heading us towards fascism, fascist dictatorship. It's that law. And you say, well, I like Snyder. He wouldn't do that. He's a nice guy. Well, what about, I don't trust anybody with this kind of power, to tell you the truth, folks, and I don't think you should either.
No.
But what about the guy after him? If that law is still in place and the guy after him has a dark side, all of a sudden the whole state of Michigan can be taken over all the way down to the local level. And you say, Koronek, you're going nuts here. But it's possible, isn't it? That's what they say on the History Channel about UFOs. It's possible that there's aliens already here.
Yeah.
It's possible. Well, of course, anything is possible. Anything is possible. You know, I mean, really. You know, it could be supernatural, it could be a cult, it could be in the next dimension. I mean, anything is. So I'm not going that crazy. I'm saying, look at what could go on. Right now, we've got five cities that are under emergency financial manager. Benton Harbor, for the last 5 years, because they started under the old law, is still under emergency financial management. When will they ever stop? They can't have elections. The people that have no power to control their government, they have no say whatsoever. The state has one person making decisions.
Not elected.
Not elected, just appointed by the governor. And who knows how long it might go on? How long will the Detroit Public Schools have an emergency financial manager? Does Detroit have an emergency financial manager right now? Well, technically they don't, but they had that consent agreement, and it's almost going to work out to be the same thing.
It could head that way.
If push comes to shove, and it won't take much push or shoving, the governor will just take it over. So what good is the legislature, too? If the governor can really control all the workers of all the schools and all the cities of the state of Michigan just by saying he wants to do that, he said, well, we won't let that happen. We'll recall him. Oh, will you? Yeah. Let's see what will happen in Wisconsin, where they have a governor right now who took unbelievable steps, undemocratic steps, I believe, to hurt government workers and teachers and change laws in Wisconsin. They did get around a ballot proposal, and I think it's June 2nd that the people of Wisconsin are going to vote to recall the governor because of all of these, call it for what it is, right-wing,
unjust,
ideological positions that really are completely undemocratic in their nature. They're undemocratic to, in other words, they're not fair to all the people. That's what democracy is, where you're being fair to all the people. Oh, my goodness. Well, listen to Scoopic here, okay? Because it may not happen. This ballot proposal that you might want to vote for, I certainly do, to get rid of that threat of dictatorship just by the whim of the governor. Not the whim, but just the decision. Okay, logical objective, I'm going to take over the whole state.
Stroke of the pen, it takes.
Right, so I'm not underrating governor's wisdom about this, but I am saying it shouldn't happen this way. State law, Scoobick points out, is pretty clear when it comes to the forum petition drives. And a group fronting for the GOP has found a technicality that could stop the ballot drive dead in its tracks. Are you sitting down, says Tim Scoobick? Well, I am right now in the studio, hope you are. If you're driving down the road, maybe you want to pull off to the side so you don't go crazy here. They say that the type size on the emergency manager ballot proposal petition was too small. The law says the type size shall, quote unquote, shall, not must, but shall be 14 points. That's a certain height in the printing profession.
Does it say what type of font, like Times New Roman?
Not in this case. Yeah. The anti-labor folks who are against the who are against this proposal, because supposedly labor, yeah, the people, the labor unions that represent all the people whose contracts are being negated by the emergency manager laws and so on, and they're, you know, they're behind the petition drive as well as many others. But the anti-labor folks will ask the State Board of Canvassers later this month, that is this month, April, so it's coming up in the next week or so, to block the issue from ever getting to the ballot based on that and perhaps four other irregularities. And you say, well, the board will never do that on such picky grounds. Oh, yes, it could, says Tim Scoopick. The four-member board is two Democrats and two Republicans. Any vote that goes 2-2, and we know how Republicans and Democrats these days don't go along with each other for any reason.
Yeah, they always vote against each other.
Even if it's an idea that all of them should support, I might add.
Well, not always, but mostly.
Like clean environment, things that I think everybody should support, you know.
Yeah, things that matter.
Right. Working out compromises, okay? It's not the idea that you're for or against, but you can work out a way that everybody could sort of be happy with. No. Democrats, Republicans. So if they split, guess what happens? It automatically kills the measure. And dollars to donuts, says Tim Scoobick. The two R's on the board, that is the two Republicans on the board, have just been handed a convenient excuse to deny labor a ballot slot. But the story does not end there, says Scoopic, as labor will quickly scoot into the courts to find some judge to overturn the tie vote and clear the way for a November vote. But yet another third. Eventually, whatever lower court decisions are rendered, ultimately the case will land in the Michigan Supreme Court, where, guess who, has enough votes to send the unions to the showers. That's right, the Republicans. That is the Supreme Court judges who were supported by the Republican Party. Two new Republicans were elected 2 years ago, folks. They've got the vast majority there. And by the way, Supreme Court judges, and I don't know if they really should be partisan. I'm really kind of against that, although our U.S. Supreme Court, in effect, is partisan because the president, whatever party he's with, Republicans, Democrats, they'll try to appoint someone similar to their own philosophies, and usually they don't appoint middle-of-the-roaders. In other words, totally objective legal people. In November, you will, even if you don't have the emergency manager ballot proposal to vote on because their type font was the wrong size, and there's no accounting for or compromise for logic here, even though I understand they got over 500,000 signatures and we needed 300,000.
Yeah, that's
they
a lot.
Turned in 500,000 signatures of people from the state of Michigan that want this on the ballot. Okay. But in November, at the very least, folks, remember, you could vote for Democratic Party favorable judges to try to balance out the Supreme Court a little bit. Because right now, those Republican judges are going lockstep up and down the line with any law that's being passed by the legislature. It's only 2 minutes to two. We're going to have to wrap up, folks, but pay attention to all of those things and stay on top of it if you can. Register, vote, tell your friends about these issues, get them out there, and maybe we can make a difference, if not now, by November anyway. Finally, we want to, and Kevin, you were there videotaping, let you know that it's the last weekend to see the Gigantus production of Grease. Gigantus Grease. Grease Gigantus. Here at Henry Ford Community College.
Yeah, over in the auditorium here on campus and the Fine Arts Center. It was, when I was in there, we were filming a three-camera setup of the production, and through my eyes, through the viewfinder, it looked like a really, really good organized and set up play. Everybody should come out and support it and check it out. Tickets for the public are $17. Tickets for students with ID is just $15. And it runs the last weekend, this weekend. So, come out and support it.
Yeah, that's tonight, Friday night, and Saturday night, tomorrow night at 8 p.m. And that's at the Adroy Auditorium right here, part of our Fine Arts Center at Henry Ford Community College, main campus on Evergreen Road, just south of Ford Road. And I would assume, since we know it starts at 8 o'clock, I think you can get in line a little earlier, but the doors open about 7:30. And so I'd suggest getting there early. I bet they're going to sell out. It's the last weekend. It's only been two weekends, so you got to sort of imagine a lot of people already saw it, but there's even more. There's a review in, I believe it's the Times Herald this week, rave review. Just goes on and on about how great this is. And sure, yes, there's the movie Grease. You could always rent that, I guess, with Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta. Yeah. But still, the play is how it all started. And it's a great musical and a lot of spirit from, I think it's a cast of 29, something like that.
Yeah.
If you were tuned in to the end of the big band show, Big Band Broadway and Beyond today between 10 and 1 o'clock, you actually heard G. Kevin Duke.